Left off in the previous year with the din that appears both in Agamar as well as a Mishnah, Masechta Sota, that there are certain mitzvahs and brachas and tefillos a person need not say necessarily Lashon HaKodesh. One can perform the mitzvah b'chol lashon. So one of the things on the list that can be performed, can be recited b'chol lashon, are brachas. The Gemara tells the story about somebody recited a bracha in Aramaic. It wasn't even a precise translation. It was a very loose translation of Hamotzi Lechem Haaretz, but that would be acceptable as well. So the only thing is that the Rishon began to put the brakes on this halacha, that when do we say that a person can fulfill a mitzvah and other lashonos? That's if he understands the lashon. If I read transliterate something in Japanese, I don't speak Japanese, so for me that's not considered to be a lashon. Lashon HaKodesh is not that way. Lashon HaKodesh, I can fulfill the mitzvah even if I don't understand anything. So if I say motzi lechem, I say the words motzi lechem, even though I don't speak Hebrew, I have no idea what this bracha means. It doesn't matter. We explained that Lashon Kodesh is almost objectively a lashon. Kodesh Baruch Hu declared the Torah declares it to be a lashon. Therefore, it's declared as a lashon under all circumstances. Whereas other lashonos, so it depends. If you understand it, you understand it. You don't understand it, but it's just gibberish. It's just grunting. It's not chal as a mitzvah shebedibur. But now the question becomes, even assuming this distinction, the Lashon HaKodesh is always acceptable, even if I don't understand it, are there any limitations to that? So maybe that rule is only true that I can fulfill a mitzvah of the Lashon HaKodesh if I don't understand it. That's at least if I'm saying the words myself. But if I want to be yotzei through the vehicle of Shomea Ka'ona, so maybe we have to be a little bit more weary. Now, Shomea Ka'ona is a great principle. It's a Mishnah, Gemara, Masechet Sukkah. We use it many, many times. See, so we hear Kiddush. Many people are not going to make Kiddush themselves tonight. They're going to hear Kiddush from somebody else. Most people didn't read the Megillah themselves 2 weeks ago. They heard the Megillah from somebody else. Shomea Ka'ona, what you hear is as if you said. So could one argue that when it comes to Shomea Ka'ona, in order to be a Shomea, in order to classify you as I'm hearing, Lashon Shmiya doesn't only mean to physically hear. Shomea very often has the connotation of Lahavim, to understand as well. Like Shema Yisrael, you have to understand what you're saying. So could it be that if I want to, let's say, make Kiddush for myself, I don't really have to understand the text. If I want to fulfill a mitzvah with my own words, so it doesn't matter. As long as it's B'Lashon HaKodesh, I don't have to understand. But if I want to be Yotzei through the vehicle of Shomea Ka'ona, maybe one can argue that in order to invoke the principle of Shomea Ka'ona, you have to be a Sharneya. You have to be someone who understands, someone who chaps what the other person's saying. If it just sounds like just a lot of sounds to me, I don't know what the words mean even, maybe that's a limitation of Shomea Ka'ona. That's a further question to ask you. So again, everybody agrees fundamentally you can be Yotzei B'Lashon HaKodesh without understanding. Everybody agrees that in order to be Yotzei B'Shal B'Sholos, you have to understand. Now we're asking a technical question: within Lashon HaKodesh, should we differentiate between yourself or through Shomea Ka'ona? So we take a look at the fifth of the Maariv HaKamos. So the Rosh attempts to bring proofs one way or the other. It starts with the sugya that appears at the beginning of the seventh parak of Brachos. The Rosh is quoting.
It should be a two-sided question. The other question should be, the person saying the bracha to be yotze someone else, who then have to understand it if you require the person who's listening to understand it.
So not necessarily. One could argue that the potential requirement for the to be understand that you're invoking the principle of Shomea Ka'ona, that could be because otherwise you're not a Shomea. It's a chisar in Shomea Ka'aniyah. Whereas from the vantage point of the person who's being mowed to you, he's being answered. He's saying the words of Kiddush. He has no idea what he's saying, but he knows there's a mitzvah of Kiddush, and he says in the Siddur, so he's breaking his teeth over the Hebrew. He doesn't understand a word of what he's saying. So he's Yotzei, and theoretically he can be mowed to me. If I understand it. If I don't understand it, then it's my deficiency. So I'm not sure there would be a similar deficiency if the person who's being mitzi doesn't understand. So comes the Rosh and raises the question, what's it? Is there a variety one way or the other? So the Rush quotes a sugi that appears in the seventh paragraph of the Mitzvah, at the beginning of the fifth of the Marmakamos. Tadinam Yochi, Shnayim She'achlu Mitzvah Lecholin. If two people ate together, they're not supposed to bench as a quote unquote Zimun. What is not supposed to be both to the other? The general principle of benching with Zimun, the way we do it today, is a little bit different than it was done in the days of Chazal. In the days of Chazal, when you bench as a Mezuman, one person benched, and he was mighty, everybody else, by hearing the benching. The reason why most people don't do that anymore is that the later Rachmanim were very concerned that it's hard for people to pay attention. We know during the Megillah, people start to space out a little bit, people tune out, this place cough for this, what's sneezing. So we try to avoid Shemekah when we don't have to. Now, sometimes we have no choice. Let's say if we don't create a Megillah, we have to rely on Shemek Oina, because otherwise you wouldn't be Yotzi. I don't have a Megillah, but I'm just reading out of a Chumash, I wouldn't be Yotzi. So I have to rely on Shemek Oina. Let's say Kiddush Alayayin, unless everyone's going to be walking around with their own cup of wine, so we have to rely in a certain sense on Shemek Oina. Pasha Zohar, not everyone's walking around with their own Sefer Torah. So sometimes our hands are tied, we have to rely on Shemek Oina. But whenever we can avoid it, it's usually better to avoid it, especially mitzvahs that take some time. So to over here, it takes a little bit of while to recite Birchas Hamazon. So people can begin to space out a little bit. So therefore, our practice is that when we bench for Mezuman, we don't rely on Shemek Oina. Rather, each person for themselves benches on their own. But in the olden days, benching for Mezuman literally meant to invoke the principle of Shemek Oina. So here the Braisa tells us that if you have two people benching together, they have to split up. They have to bench separately. One should not be mighty at the other. When do we say this? Shishneim sofrim. That's if they're both sofrim. I mean, it doesn't mean the guy who's writing Sefer Torah. It's a Talmid Chacham. Sometimes the Gemara uses that phrase to describe a Talmid Chacham. So if you have two Talmid Chacham, they both know how to bench, then it's really not right for one to be both to the other. Now, why that's a problem? Why is that a deficiency of Shemek Oina? That's already a whole other sugya. Maybe we'll get to the sugya at some point a little bit later on, because it appears we won't get to it in the seventh parak, I'm pretty sure about, but there is a parallel sugya at the end of the sixth parak. So maybe we'll see when we get to it at the end of this year. But for some reason, when you have two people, we're not supposed to bench for Mezuman, we're not supposed to rely on Shemek Oina. But if you're stuck, well, Echad Sof V'Echad Bor, Sof V'Vach Bor Yitzay. But if you have two people, one's a Tabachach and one's a Bor. Bor is for someone who doesn't know anything. I think ignoramus, I think, is the official English translation. If a person doesn't understand anything, that's not a bench. It's probably not too much of a difference. It's probably very, very similar. So the term Am Haaretz originally in Chazal meant something a little bit different. Am Haaretz in the days of Chazal did not conjure up the image of someone who wasn't knowledgeable. It referred to someone who wasn't very careful or meticulous in certain mitzvahs. In today's lingo, so the word Am Haaretz, when you accuse the guys, that guy's an Am Haaretz, you shouldn't be saying that. If you say, that guy's an Am Haaretz, you probably don't mean that he's not machped the intricacies of Tumah V'Tahara. You probably don't mean that he's not Neman al HaMaisrus. You probably just mean he doesn't know too much. But in the days of Chazal, the word Am Haaretz had a little bit of a different connotation. So here the Braisa says that if you have no choice and one guy, Nam Nebuchad, doesn't have a bench, so what do you do? So comes the Rush with the following observation. Mikan Rotsu Abiraya. There are some who want to bring a riot for the following. This boor who doesn't know how to bench, the assumption is he doesn't even understand the words. He's such an ignoramus, such an orange. The Pasha doesn't even understand the words. Wait a second. If he doesn't understand the words, how can I be mighty him? How can I be mighty him? The answer is because it's being done in Lashon HaKodesh. And in Hebrew, even if you don't understand the words, that's okay. Even if you're being yaitzeh to Shemek Oina. So there's some wanted to be a riot from this braisa, and the fact that we do permit the Talmid Chacham to be motzi the boor, notwithstanding the fact that the boor doesn't understand the word, you see from here that in Lashon HaKodesh, there's no need to understand, even if you're not saying the words, even if you're merely being yaitzeh to Shemek Oina. So Mikan Rotz Lavi Raya, from here someone wanted to be a riot, the Isha Yotzeh B'Rechza Mazah B'Shmiya, Ava B'Sha'ed Revi Lashon HaKodesh, that women in the days of the Rishonim, most of them did not understand Lashon HaKodesh. Many of the men didn't understand Lashon HaKodesh. And how is a woman going to be Yaitzeh benching? So the answer is that Shemek Oina, I'm going to bench for her. I'm going to bench for this woman. She's going to hear my benching. There's no need for her to bench dafka in the vernacular, dafka in the Lashon that she understands. Even though she's been Yotzeh to Shemek Oina, there is no requirement to understand what you're saying. Or what is being said to you, even though you do not understand the word, that would still be acceptable, provided that's Lashon HaKodesh. So says the Rosh, no. The Ein Raya Mikan, says the Rosh, if that's what you're banking on, this proof, this is not a valid proof. The Duma Mariocha, Shabur Maven Lashna Kodesh, well, any of the Lavorich. So I love the job, brisket. There are different kinds of Amoritz. That who says that the Amoritz that the Gemara is referring to, the Bor Chazal referring to, is someone who doesn't speak Hebrew. He speaks Hebrew perfectly, just doesn't know how to bench. Nebuch, there are a lot of people. They're fluent in Lashna Kodesh, but they don't know how to, what the words of Bechzabalzan are. So says the Rosh, such a person, you can be mighty with Shemek Rida. If you have somebody who doesn't speak Hebrew, maybe not. Maybe not. The Rosh says, there's no Rai from here. So other Rishonim want to bring other Rai from other Sugyas, parallel Sugyas, that you can be Yaitse, a mitzvah of Shemek, through the vehicle of Shemek Rida, notwithstanding the fact you don't understand the word. The Rashi, if you write in the standard Megillah, Haloi Shishama Shuas Yatza. The Mishnah says, Maseches Megillah, that a loe, someone who speaks other languages, which usually has the connotation that he doesn't speak Hebrew, he doesn't understand Lashna Kodesh, it says that as long as he has the Megillah, Lashna Kodesh, he would be, I'd say, Afa Bishem Eben Aloshet, even though presumably he doesn't understand Hebrew. So the same way that one can be Yotze Kriyas Megillah in Hebrew without understanding it, one can be Yotze Kiddush in Hebrew, Bersa Mazen in Hebrew, there is no such requirement to invoke Shema Kodesh to be someone who understands. Says the Rosh, it's also not a Raya. Yesh lirchos to pursue my nisa shiny. You cannot bring any rayas, any proofs from Kriyas HaMegillah. Kriyas HaMegillah works with its own rules. The goal of Kriyas HaMegillah is not that everyone understands every single word of the Megillah. The goal is to get everyone together. There's a miracle. But hearing these words that describe the story, do I understand every single detail of the Megillah? No. And that's okay. Kriyas HaMegillah has almost a sense, a lower standard of understanding than other mitzvahs. How do we know that that's the case? So the Rosh makes reference to a Gemara in Maseches Megillah. Kedem ha'osim Ravina ha'cheshtranim b'nei ha'ramachim mi adina and ma'inihu al-besumei nisashayni. The Gemara says there are words in the Megillah that we don't understand. The greatest Tamachachim doesn't understand. It says in the Megillah that they sent out the messages to the ha'cheshtranim b'nei ha'ramachim. So I challenge you to translate what that means. I think usually in the English it's like, the satraps, so if you bumped into a satrap, you wouldn't be sure what that was. It means we're not really sure what that means. We know what it basically means. They're part of the ancient Persian Pony Express. So we usually think that the Pony Express started in America in the 1850s. It started actually in Persia. They actually perfected that method of literally going from one horse to the next horse, switching horses, switching riders. The whole chop of the Pony Express was, is that instead of, in the olden days, if you wanted to get a letter from New York to California, you had one guy, he had to stop. Every couple of hours, he had to rest. His horse had to rest. It would take him a year and a half till he got cross country. So they set up this Gavaldika system that every few hours, he would stop. And then he'd hand over the letter to the next guy. He would take a rest, his horse would rest. The next guy would go 100 miles, and it would cut down the time to a couple of days to get the cross country. It was a grandiose thing out in the wild, wild west. It lasted for about maybe like 10 years. The whole Pony Express wasn't that long. As soon as they invented the telegraph, the telegraph, the whole thing was wasn't so important anymore. So it didn't end the railroads. The whole thing didn't last very long. But the original model of a Pony Express actually existed in ancient Persia, they said. So the historians say, which is basically what the Megillah describes. When the Megillah describes every couple of prachim is sending out letters, and it says Haratzim Ruchle Harechash Achash Feni Bnei Ramachim. So that phrase Achash Feni Bnei Ramachim is some kind of a technical term at what your position was. You won your badge. It said I'm an Achshtaranim, and the other guy I'm a Bnei Ramachim. Whatever it was, with different positions in the postal delivery of ancient Persia. So nobody knows what the words really mean, and it doesn't matter. Who cares? If for Kriyas HaMegillah, that's good enough. So therefore, the Rosh says if you have a woman who doesn't understand, but he's Mechashverosh, that's also good. Ravina says, I don't understand Bnei Rachim. My wife doesn't understand Bnei Rachim. It's all good. We come to shul, everyone's dressed up at Purim, we're waving our crackers, everyone's good to go. That's good enough for the standards of Kriyas HaMegillah. So when all the dust settles, we're not sure what it is. We have some Rishonim wanting to bring Rayas that you need not understand Lashon HaKodesh for Shemei Koneh, and not everyone agrees. How do we pass that law? So the Minhag Yisrael has been already for hundreds of years not to be concerned about this. When I make Kiddush for somebody, I don't ask them, Do you understand what I'm saying? As long as it's Kiddush, it knows, and it's Friday night, Shabbos, whether they understand the words or not. That's provided that I say it for Lashon HaKodesh. If it's not said for Lashon HaKodesh, if I'm going to make Kiddush in English, and the guy doesn't speak English, that's a problem. But as long as the person understands the language, if it's another language, or Lashon HaKodesh, even if he doesn't understand it, that would be acceptable. Well, let's go back to our original model, where the Gemara says you can make a bracha, you can make Kiddush, you can make Bechsebaz, you can daven, technically speaking, in other languages, again, provided that you understand it. What if I understand it, but nobody else around me understands it? Namely, if I'm in France and I'm making Kiddush in French, that's wonderful. But what if I'm in Tinek and I'm making Kiddush in French? So a handful of people understand French, but most people don't. So maybe one could argue that other languages are not really languages unless they're in the location that they're actually spoken. So is there a precedent for this idea? Is this true, that concept? It doesn't say it explicitly in the Gemara. So there is a Ritva in the sixth of the Marmikamas, at the Ritva, the beginning of Maseches Nedarim. So the context of the Ramah, of the Ritva is discussing the first Mishnah Nedarim, called Kinu Nedarim Ki Nedarim. What is a Kinu, what's the Kinu of a Nedar mean? So the Mishnah, then the Gemara elaborates upon this and says, when a person wants to take a Nedar, so he wants to say that this bread should be also to him, so he could say that the bread should be like a carbon to him. That would be like the normal way of saying it, just as a carbon is prohibited. So the bread should be like a carbon. That's basically what the Lashon of a Neder is. When you take one Chefza, that's Mutter, and you compare it to another, Davar Aser, you say just as a carbon is also, this should be like a carbon. But then the Mishnah starts speaking about using other kinds of words, other phrases that sound a little bit like the word carbon, but not quite. The Mishnah speaks about konamos, carbon, konamos. It sounds like someone's mispronouncing the word. So yeah, the answer is someone is mispronouncing the word. The Gemara speaks about what it called kinuyim. So for the different lashonos that he used in Hilchos Nedarim, Hilchos Shvuos, there are words that sound like a little bit derived from those words, but they're not quite the same. So then the Mishnayos, the beginning of Maseches Nedarim, list off a whole bunch of different words. What's called a kinuy for the word carbon? What's called the kinuy for the word nazir? So a guy wants to become a nazir. So instead of saying already nazir, it says already naziach or something. It says some word that sounds a little bit. Well, let's say a person, instead of saying shvu, he says shvusa. He says that there are words that sound close, but they're not precise. So the Mishnah says those are called kinuyim, and kinuyim are valid also. You can become a nedr, a shvu, a nazir. Whatever you can do with the real lashon, you can do with this watered-down lashon as well. Where did this come from? Like, who made up these lashonos? The Gemara quotes in Machlekes Amoraim where these lashonos came from. So Rabbi Yochanan says that these lashonos came from a watered down version. It's a lashon that these are languages that are not quite lashon hakodesh. They're a little bit of corrupted lashon hakodesh. We would probably call them something close like the slang. Means they're off a little bit. They're not the Webster dictionary way of pronouncing a word. But they become understood. People know what they mean. The guy says the word naziach, naziach. Yeah, it's all the same thing. The guy says shvusa, shvuka, shvuka, shvuka. Yeah, it's all the same thing. So they'll show us that are a little bit of corrupted, but they're considered to be close enough for the purpose of the show notes to be acceptable. So comes the Ritva, the sixth of the Mamakamos, and tells us that's the third line from the bottom of the Ritva to the end of the line. Let's say you have places that don't use these words. If I'm in a place where a guy says konam, everyone knows, oh yeah, yeah, that's the slang for carbon, great. Guy says the word konam, and no one knows what he's talking about. So the Ritva says, so that's not binding. That's not a neder. In order to make a neder, you have to have a lashon. You have to be levati b'shvasayim. You have to pronounce it with your mouth. If a person doesn't actually verbalize the neder is not binding. So comes the Ritva and says, even though the Mishnah is mechadish to us that these slangs are considered to be like verbalization, that's the places where they speak the slang. But if nobody knows what you're talking about, even though you know what you're talking about, but nobody else does, that wouldn't be binding. So the Mishnah Brura in Hilchos Kriyashma quotes this Ritva, and he says that just as the Ritva says that the kinuyim are not binding outside of the location where they're spoken, where they're understood, so too languages, like Gabi Mitzvahs. The Ritva is not talking about Mitzvahs. The Ritva is talking about Nedarim and Shavuos and Neziros. But the Mishnah Brura says we can extrapolate to Kriyashma and Tefillah, that just as the Ritva says that kinuyim outside of their location are basically just mumbling, it's not really words at all, who are dinami, languages outside of the location where they're spoken, also are not valid. Therefore, if a person wants to be Yotze, Kriyashma in French, that's wonderful if you're in Paris. But if you're in Tinek, it's not going to work. That's the Mishnah Brura's comparison. So there are others who question the Mishnah Brura's comparison that it could be that these kinuyim are almost like one notch below languages. These are not even official languages. Within the world, I'm not an expert in philology, as I would call it, the study of language or something. I'm not an expert in that area, but there are languages. It means there are certain words that are acceptable, formal words in a language. You can discuss, well, It's a language in Tokyo. It's not a language in New York. Okay, so maybe you're in Tokyo, maybe yeah, maybe no. But then there are other statements. They're not even languages. They're just corrupt. They're just slang. They're just the way people speak on the street. So one can argue that the way people speak on the street, they're not even considered by the Hamon Am to be a formal way of speech. So that's when the Ritva was putting the brakes on and saying, if you don't say like this Ritva, so that any sound anywhere means something. Three guys talked to you. Oh, that meant already knows it. So because they got grunts. So that means Shema Yisrael. So there have to be certain standards as to what's considered to be words. Well, how do you define whether what I said was just a lot of noise, a lot of sounds, or whether it was actually intelligent words that mean something? So the answer is that it depends a lot on not just what you understand, but the Hamon Am understand. What do people consider this to be? So if you have something that's a Lashon French, it's very hard to say French are not words. But when two guys in France are talking to each other, so the Americans think they're just grunting at each other. No, they understand. They understand. That's a language. That's how they communicate. They've been talking that language for thousands of years. I personally don't speak French, so I don't understand it. But if it's an official language, it's an official language. Whereas you have people who are saying these funny words that I'm checking the dictionary. I can't find them anywhere. Konech, konam, hazir, nazir. These are bizarre words. So that's what the Ritva says. If you have words that are not really part of official languages, so then to say that they're going to carry over from one locale to another, that's already a stretch. But if something is an official Lashon, it's a Lashon, it's a Lashon. It's on the 70 list of official sanctioned, accepted languages in the world. Why does anyone else have to understand me? So it's not clear what the Mishnah Berurah said. The Mishnah Berurah knows Kriya Shema, dug up this Ritva, made a whole point that is saying that if you want to say Kriya Shema in English, that's great, provided that, number one, you understand English, and provided everybody else understands English around you. The Mishnah Berurah would claim, if you want to be Yaitse Kriya Shema in Japanese, then you have to speak Japanese and you have to be in Tokyo. If you're in New York, most people don't speak Japanese, that wouldn't be good. And others are not convinced. Others say, no, if it's a language, it's a language.
So, if you're being Yotze someone else.
No, even be Yotze yourself now. Even be Yotze yourself. Because it has to be halachic words.
Then what difference does it make if everybody else?
So that's what the Mishnah Berurah argues, that let's say as follows. Let's say I decide in my own mind that this is how I translate for myself, Shema Yisrael. I said, good, good. That means to me, whenever I hear those words, that means Shema Yisrael. So I could be Yotze Shema Yisrael. That's called Shema Yisrael B'Chaloshon. So Mishnah Berurah says, Loshon doesn't just mean sounds that you recognize. The very notion of a Loshon, how does something become a language? Enough people speak it. So it's like, if two guys have a secret way of communication, that's not a language. But if you have a whole area, a whole group of people who are speaking it, that becomes halachically a language. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah is claiming, that recognition of the Torah, that other Lashonas are called Lashon, that's in places where people speak them. If no one else understands it, the fact that you understand it, that's not going to make it to Lashon. You can argue. The other Rechavim will argue with that Mishnah Berurah, but the Mishnah Berurah's Raya was from the Ritva in Adarim, and others wanted to argue with that Raya. So then... Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
To a place where no one speaks English.
Right, that's right.
Same words.
That is right. That's exactly what Mishnah Berurah says. Right. So I see.
Recognize the language.
So you both, the two of you are from that group of Acharonim who disagree with the Mishnah Berurah. I hear what you're saying.
I don't understand.
So I guess we don't understand the language. We don't understand the Mishnah Berurah. Okay.
Recognizes there were 70 languages that Mishnah Berurah wrote the Torah, 70 languages. So it was kavua on almost on Masorah Torah Moshe Sinai that there were 70 lashonos. So in that itself has a madrega that lashon is not a makom, but a language that's universal, because otherwise it wouldn't be in one place written. The fact that it's written in one place is not designated to a locale.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that we would pick up. We'd be so back by the number 70 today. I mean, the number 70. There are a lot more languages today that are official languages than 70. 70 was very heading and groupings, right. Categories.
But the point that the Torah, points out that it's 70 language and it was written in one place, that it's not, why wasn't it sent out to 70 places? It was written and written in one place. So the Lashon and the place is not necessarily connected.
I mean, it derived the fact that it was written with a Lashon, it was still meaningful, even though it wasn't a place where everyone spoke those languages. Interesting, right? It's very unclear exactly what the point was of writing the Sefer Torah, the Chalosh, who was coming to read it exactly. So that's a Netziv's Raya, that that you're allowed to teach a non-Jew Torah Shabbat. The Gemara says you're not supposed to teach non-Jew Torah. So the Tziv says a Torah Shabbat you're allowed to, because that's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. He wrote it in the other languages so everyone could come and understand it. So again, it's not clear exactly who was coming to go read those read the Sefer Torah on the rocks at that time. Not clear. But whatever the case may be, Mishnah Berurah convinced us it's true, and a lot of Achronim don't, including sort of people in this very room who want to disagree with the Mishnah Berurah. So comes the Gemara Maseches Kedushin and has a similar statement. Mishnah Berurah also thought it was a riot of this question, and that's a story about Kedushin. The Gemara has a question: when a person is Mekadosh Anisha, so it's not enough just to give a ring; he has to say a lashon or words that accompany the Kedushin. So the Gemara wants to know there are certain lashonos that are not clear. Does it really mean a lashon of language of marriage? Maybe it has a little bit of a different connotation. So the Gemara says in the eighth of the comes, the guy standing under the chuppah and he gives his collar ring and he says, all right, charufasi. So she's checking her, Googling on the book. What's charufasi mean? It's a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. It's a phrase that's used to describe something that resembles to some degree a kind of a marriage. So the Gemara wants to know what's the din. So the Gemara says that after all the dust settled, the Gemara says that the word charufa meant different things in different locations. So the last of the lines, where it's a bold print, the Hachkabar, Omer charufa b'Yehuda mekudeshes, she came b'Yehuda kon erusa charufa. Eretz Yisrael in the days of the Tanaim was divided up to three different locations. There was Eretz Yehuda, the southern part of Eretz Yisrael. There was the Galil, that's the phrase the Mishnah uses, the northern part of Eretz Yisrael. And then there was the Eber Yarden, that was the eastern part of the Yarden, that was also inhabited by many, many Jews. Those were the three parts, the official three parts of Eretz Yisrael. So somehow that third part got lost in the shuffle in today's world. But Lamaisa, that was always part of Eretz Yisrael. Jews were going to live there also, but that was always part of Eretz Yisrael proper. Both in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu as well as in the days of Bayashen. It's clear as day. The Mishnais, and Shvius, and Shmita, and Trumas, that discussed the entire Jewish communities that lived in the Eber Yarden on the east bank of the Yarden. West Bank, that was Eretz Yehuda. But this is talking about the other side of the Yarden. It was also part of Eretz Yisrael. So comes the Gemara and says that if a person says the word Charufa in Eretz Yehuda, if you're Mekadosh Anisha in Beit Meir, you're in Eretz Yehuda, it's not Mekudeshes. But if you say the same thing in the Galil, if you're Mekadosh Anisha in Tveria with the Lashon Charufa, then ain't Mekudeshes. So Mishmur says, you see that the word Charufa has a meaning in the language in Judean Hebrew. So it constitutes the language and it's called the Galilean. I think we'll sound like a scholar, Galilean Hebrew. So it doesn't count. So how can it be? So the answer says the Mishnah Berurah that it depends where you are. You can't superimpose. You can't just take languages from one location to another. It has to be in that location itself. So others wanted to disagree with this, right? Also the Mishnah Berurah. This is not about Kiddushin. If nobody knows what you're talking about, there are no Eidim. What does that have to do with being at the Kriya Shema? Kriya Shema, the only one who has to understand is myself. I'm speaking to the Rebbe Shlomo understands all the languages. So for Kriya Shema, Tefillah and Brachas, if I know what I'm talking about, ma'achbalti what other people know. But by Kiddushin, it's not just about me. It's about the woman and about the Eidim. So if a man and a woman go into a Tveria and he says, Ered Charufasi, the Eidim is scratching their head. They don't know what the guy's talking about. So that's not an Eidim. It's for Kiddushin. Kashbo Eidim is nothing. So at the end of the day, the two riots in the Mishnah Berurah, one from the Ridva in Nidarim and one from the Gemara Kiddushin, other Rechom are not convinced that those riots are correct. And therefore, not everyone agrees to this Mishnah Berurah. So the bottom line, this is potentially enough to make Udina. So if a person doesn't speak Lashon Kodesh, the person's about Tshuva, they're getting used to davening and brachas, and they're still saying it in other languages. So if they're saying it in English and they're in America, great. But if they're saying it in English, I would venture to say that if they speak English in Eretz Yisrael, I think that would be okay. We'll reference, I think, both Zalman and Daniel. I think in both Efrat and Ramat Beit Shemesh, there are fair enough people who speak English. Am I correct? I'm looking at the two people on the phone now.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Nachon. Thank you, Reverend Hartson. Okay. So I think that if you speak English in those places, we're good. If a guy wants to say Kriya Shema in English I'm trying to think of a country that doesn't speak English. I don't know.
Ukraine.
Okay, so I say English in a place in which nobody speaks English. So that would be a more serious question. That would depend on the Mishnah Berurah and the other Mishnah. So I hope the basic din of a Chaloshin works. That's our Gemara. Whether there are limitations, that depends on some of the things we'll talk about. Hopefully, next week, we'll get back to our basic din of the Gemara. The reciting of the Brach in the other Lashon, hopefully with some of the other ramifications. Okay. Shabbos, everyone. Okay. Shabbos.
Travis.
Travis.
Neil, I'll see you on the other side.